Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Yesterday's hearings to investigate the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol focused on Donald Trump's efforts to pressure election officials to overturn the 2020 presidential results. We heard powerful testimony from Georgia election workers Ruby Freeman and her daughter Shay Moss. They are still living in fear after being the targets of a dangerous and racist smear campaign by Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani. Here is committee member Representative Adam Schiff questioning Shay Moss at yesterday's hearing.
Well, I know the events that we're here to talk about today are incredibly difficult to relive. Your proud service as an election worker took a dramatic turn on the day that Rudy Giuliani publicized a video of you and your mother counting ballots on election night. President Trump, Rudy Giuliani, and others claimed on the basis of this video that you and your mother were somehow involved in a plot to kick out observers, bring suitcases of false ballots for Biden into the arena, and then run them through the machines multiple times. None of that was true, was it?
None of it.
I'd like to show you some of the statements that Rudy Giuliani made in a second hearing before the Georgia state legislators, a week after that video clip from State Farm Arena was first circulated by Mr. Giuliani and President Trump. I want to advise viewers that these statements are completely false and also deeply disturbing.
Tape earlier in the day of Ruby Freeman and Shay Freeman Moss and one other gentleman, quite obviously, surreptitiously passing around USB ports as if they are vials of heroin or cocaine. I mean, it's obvious to anyone who's a criminal investigator or prosecutor, they are engaged in surreptitious illegal activity again that day. And that's a week ago, and they're still walking around Georgia lying. Should have been questioned already. Their places of work, their homes should have been searched for evidence of ballots, for evidence of USB ports, for evidence of voter fraud.
Just to repeat, Rudy Giuliani said Ruby Freeman and her daughter Shay Moss were using USB sticks to deliver fake votes, quote, as if they were heroin or cocaine, end quote. Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss are black. Donald Trump mentioned Ruby Freeman 18 times in phone calls full of lies about the election. They had no security or protection. They said their lives have been forever changed. Shay Moss says she doesn't want anyone knowing her name. She doesn't go to the grocery store. She doesn't go out. She second guesses everything she does. She says she's gained 60 pounds from the anxiety and stress of it all. She also says she regrets becoming an election worker, a job she loved before stepping down. She loved to help people, especially elders who did not have computers. She loved helping them. Her teenage son, also targeted by threats and racist messages, started failing in school, according to a report from Reuters. In her testimony, Shay Moss discussed a call she received from her grandmother after Trump supporters pushed their way into her home.
I received a call from my grandmother. This woman is my everything. I've never even heard her or seen her cry ever in my life. And she called me screaming at the top of her lungs, like, Shay, Shay, oh my God, Shay, just freaking me out, saying that there were people at her home. And they, you know, they knocked on the door, and of course she opened it and seeing who was there, who it was, and they just started pushing their way through, claiming that they were coming in to make a citizen's arrest. They needed to find me and my mom. They knew we were there. And she was just like, screaming and didn't know what to do, and I wasn't there, so, you know, I just felt so helpless and so horrible for her, and she was just screaming. I told her to close the door, don't open the door for anyone, and, you know, she's a 70-something, I won't say, year-old woman, and she doesn't like having restrictions. She wants to answer the door. She likes to get her steps in, walking around the neighborhood. And I had to tell her, like, you can't do that. You have to be safe. You know, she would tell me that at night, people would just continuously send pizzas over and over to her home, you know, and they were expecting her to pay for these large amounts of pizzas. And she went through a lot that she didn't have to. And once again, it made me just feel so horrible.
That was Shay Moss testifying at yesterday's January 6th hearing. On January 5th, right after the 2020 election, the FBI informed Shay Moss's mom, Ruby Freeman, that she needed to leave her home for her safety. She stayed away from her home for 2 months and said the experience was horrible. When she returned home in March, she had to change her appearance to stay safe, according to Reuters. Here is Ruby Freeman testifying about her experience.
I've lost my name and I've lost my reputation. I've lost my sense of security, all because a group of people, starting with number 45 and his ally, Rudy Giuliani, decided to scapegoat me and my daughter, Shay, to push their own lies about how the presidential election was stolen.
We're just going to play the tape.
There is nowhere I feel safe. Nowhere. Do you know how it feels to have the President of the United States to target you? The President of the United States is supposed to represent every American, not to target one. But he targeted me, Lady Ruby, a small business owner, a mother, a proud American citizen who stand up to help Fulton County run an election in the middle of the pandemic.
In January, an FBI agent told Ruby Freeman that a suspected January 6th Capitol rioter had been arrested and found in possession of a list of names of people to be executed. Ruby Freeman and her daughter Shay Moss were on that list. The FBI declined to comment to Reuters about the incident. These are two harrowing stories of hundreds. Reuters has documented more than 850 threats and harassing messages to election administrators, including about 100 that legal experts say could be prosecuted under federal law. Almost no one has been held accountable. Joining us to talk about yesterday's hearings and what all of this means for future elections is Jonah Minkoff-Zern, co-director of Public Citizens Democracy Campaign. Public Citizen champions the public interest in the halls of power. Jonah Minkoff-Zern builds grassroots support to get money out of politics and ensure voters have access to the ballot. He's worked to overturn the Citizens United Supreme Court decision. Hi, Jonah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I wanted to play those lengthy clips from Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss just because it's all so horrific. What really stood out for you or affected you when you watched their testimony?
You know, I see these things see things from a broad perspective often, and watching yesterday really got me personally emotional. I you know, we are watching the evidence presented in a very well documented way. This bipartisan committee showing that Trump and his MAGA allies planned, promoted, and paid for a criminal conspiracy to overturn the election they lost. And we can see that big picture, and it's really powerful to see the testimony of people like Pence's attorney or the head of the assembly in Arizona, and the things that happened to them that pressured the ways that Trump and his allies pressured them. But I really was very emotionally affected by seeing their testimonies yesterday in a way that felt very personal to me, thinking about people I know and the impact that Trump and his allies are having on individuals and their lives for their pursuit of power at any cost.
It was also so interesting to hear Shay Moss talk about why she loves her job. helping elders, helping, you know, bringing an election ballot to the hospital when someone's receiving a treatment, people who do not use computers, people who still use the phone to call and ask questions. That is what so many election workers across this country do. And it's such important work. And to also think that she, her mom, and her grandmother had to endure this horrific violence, and yet they had no protection.
Yeah, and I think that their ongoing work, and I think it's really important that we recognize that Trump and his MAGA Republican allies, their ongoing work to undermine our election has consequences. And our faith in our democracy is really essential to uphold our democracy and to maintain it. And for people to go out and do the work that her and her family did to make sure people are able to vote is because of our faith in our democracy, because of the belief that we have that our vote matters and that our voice matters. So when they threaten our democracy, when Trump and his allies threaten our democracy and continue to threaten our democracy and undermine our faith in it, it's a danger to our republic. It's a danger to our lives. And it prevents people from doing what they should and what it's necessary to build a country that's working functionally, where our voice matters, where we can pick the people who represent us. Their story is so powerful. And we work with people every day who sign up as poll workers. We worked with a lot of students in the 2020 election who were poll workers and involved in the election for the first time. And it was so powerful and beautiful to see their stories of them going out on their campuses and signing up poll workers and registering students to vote during the pandemic. And the power of their stories is really personal to me, and seeing their passion. And that's what makes our democracy flourish. And to have Trump and these allies, some of them who are winning in primaries, who are running for Secretary of State in Nevada, who are running for governor in Pennsylvania, you know, in real positions of power, is so dangerous to our republic. And it really requires all of us to act to make sure that our republic thrives and isn't undermined by these people.
To add one more element of what these women endured, another aspect of the story that is not getting that much attention, and I think it just shows how much these people have to deal with. Trevion Cuddy, I believe the name is, a publicist for Kanye West, went to Ruby Freeman's house under the guise of lending some help. But when she arrived, Cuddy told Ruby Freeman that she would be arrested on voter fraud charges. She repeatedly said, "You're in danger. You have 48 hours before unknown subjects turn up at your home and take you away." She tried to get Ruby Freeman to implicate herself in committing voter fraud, saying, "If you don't tell everything, you're going to jail." I mean, this is just ongoing for these women and hundreds of workers across the country. Probably so many stories we've never heard, and maybe we will never hear.
Absolutely. And you cited at the beginning the statistic that one in three election officials knows an election official who has been threatened or harassed. And the number is one in five that plan on resigning before the 2024 election because of the atmosphere that's been created. And this is what happens. This is the outcome of these individuals' drive for power and greed. We should call them for who they are. It's Trump and his MAGA Republican allies. Their drive for power and greed, rather than allowing our country to evolve. And I think, you know, we're at a cusp here. So our country can evolve into really a multiracial democracy that it is and that it can be, or it can slip into this authoritarianism that they hope that they are perpetuating or that they're working to establish. And it really is up to us right now. And our voice is what's going to make the difference.
The other thing I learned yesterday, Brad Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State, he has spoken out many, many times over the past year and a half. He said that 28,000 voters in Georgia skipped the presidential race in 2020, but continued to vote down ballot. he said that Republican congressmen ended up getting 33,000 more votes than Trump. And of course, we know that Trump had more than an hour long phone call with him, basically saying, alter the outcome of the election. You've got to find more votes. But here's something that I did not know. Raffensperger said Trump supporters, and I'm reading from the Daily Beast right now, went as far as to break into the home belonging to the wife of his dead son. Raffensperger testified yesterday, quote, and then some people broke into my daughter-in-law's home. My son had passed and she's a widow and has two kids. So we're very concerned about her safety also. He said his email and phone were flooded with messages. His wife received sexualized texts. I just didn't know that they actually broke into his daughter-in-law's home.
Yeah. And we have to stop this, right? Like, we have to speak out. And I think the hearings provide a really powerful voice to expose it. And I think that that voice is what's going to start to hopefully build a moment and momentum that's going to heal our country. And I think it's very important that there are Republican legislators like Raffensperger, like the head of the Arizona Assembly, who are speaking out about this. That's what can prevent us from slipping into authoritarianism. It has to be members of both parties, and especially of the offending party, that are speaking out. And it's because Trump and his allies normalized this kind of violence, this kind of hatred, that these actions are taking place. We really have to trace it back to Trump and the MAGA allies that are working with him, that this kind of violence is taking place. And, you know, just this morning, one of our interns received a response. We're reaching out. We're having a briefing today to help people learn how to write letters to the editor. We want people to speak out. And she was reaching out to someone, and they wrote back saying, why you maggots ignore the beating, torturing, raping, lynching of the Pale Five Nation? And he says, we will surround and the word N-word, SCOTUS Jackson's house. Payback will be a B-word. So this is the kind of dialogue that they've created, and we really have to change that, and we have to support leaders who are going to change it, and we have to hold people like Trump and his MAGA Republican allies accountable for their actions so that they stop.
Well, and what's important to emphasize is the people, at least the people testifying yesterday, these are not never Trumpers. I mean, these are people who in some cases still support Donald Trump. And we should just mention that this was back in March of last year. Georgia Governor Brian Kemp signed a number of laws that advocates say suppress the vote. They enact new limitations on mail-in voting. Caps and expands voters' access to in-person early voting. There's also a new ID requirement for absentee voting, which Brad Raffensperger basically defended and praised on All Things Considered last year. So that's important to point out. And then the other interesting piece of information is that the Arizona official who testified, Rusty Bowers, the Arizona House Speaker, he supported Trump's reelection bid in 2020, and he talked about receiving a call from Trump and Rudy Giuliani saying that 200,000 undocumented immigrants and 5,000 dead people testified. He said, do you have their names? Yes. Will you give them to me? Trump said, give the man what he needs. Giuliani said, I will. And he said, I will not break my oath. Well, Rusty Bowers was interviewed by Reuters on Monday, the day before he testified, and said, if Trump runs against Biden, I'm voting for Trump. So these are not never Trumpers who are testifying here.
Right. And that's true. And it's important. And it really is important that they're speaking out. And Cheney, you know, the committee vice chair, is a strong conservative, and voted with Trump. I think it was 93% of the time. So we have to recognize the power and importance of these voices. But then also you referred to the legislation that they're passing to suppress the vote. And that is very much an outcome of the ongoing effort of Trump and his allies to continue this effort to win at all costs. And rather than saying we're going to adopt our policy, we're going to adopt a platform that is palatable to the American people. What they want to do is push ahead their narrow agenda, which is consists of things like reducing taxes on the wealthy at the cost of the American people, and they will win at any cost. So their effort to pass state legislation to prevent people from voting is a very important piece of that. And they're also working on a county level to suppress the vote when they can't pass legislation on a state level. So we're working with great people around the country who are being very vigilant and showing up at these meetings and protesting and preventing this legislation from going through. And that's what we need to do on a broader level. We need to work to pass federal legislation like the Freedom to Vote Act and John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act that nearly passed this last session. And those are the bigger things that we are going to have to do in the long run to fortify and build a stronger democracy.
Right. And I just want to point out, I think this is so important. Ellie Mistal, the justice correspondent for The Nation, pointed out on Twitter yesterday that Jason Johnson was on MSNBC saying the level of rage he's heard from Black people after this testimony is something he has not heard since George Floyd. And he said it's so important to point out that these Republicans who are speaking out go home and pass voter suppression laws. And for people of color, this is really, really important. I mean, in Arizona, you know, they've passed laws that target Latinos and Native people to suppress the vote there. So that's also important, just to bring in a little bit of complexity around all of this. Today, we are talking about the January 6th hearings yesterday. If you missed the hearings, we do have several clips at yourcallradio.org, and I really encourage you to take the time to listen. It's just such important information. The powerful testimony from Ruby Freeman and her daughter, Shay Moss, are on the site. We also have a clip that we'll play later in the show from Vice News, from some of the calls, horrific calls that election workers received over the past couple of years. And if you'd like to join us, what are your thoughts on what you've heard so far and yesterday? What does this mean for the protection of election workers going forward and elections in general? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us. We're at Your Call Radio. Let's hear from Robert in San Rafael. Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. I don't believe that the violence and rhetoric is being normalized. It's just now given an outlet that people feel more comfortable or more pent up and how to release. And I'm going to put a subject on the table which isn't mentioned very often and is certainly abhorred by all sides, is that we need more, desperately need more political parties so that we can move legislation, so we can move the country forward, even if incrementally, in a direction that the majority of the population wants to move. The two-party system has long since lived out its life. We've filled the country from coast to coast. Now it's time to have at least four to five political parties.
Thank you, Robert. It's an important point. When I voted in our last election, I was looking at the Green Party candidates and the Peace and Freedom candidates thinking, we barely talk about these parties anymore. And I looked at their platforms, and their platforms are in line with what a lot of people in this country want. And yet we don't talk about that. So that is definitely on our list to bring on some of these candidates to find out, you know, what are they doing in the trenches and what are their thoughts now on third parties? And before we go to break, Jonah, you do a lot of work about getting money out of politics, and people are so frustrated by this, but it's gotten so bad that I've got to admit, we do talk about it, but during the presidential election, because so much was going on, we hardly talked about it. What are your thoughts about third parties and if they have a chance in this system that is just flooded with special interest money?
Well, I think the important point, I definitely think there's an important place and voice for third parties. I also would just add there needs to be, we need to address big money in the political process if we are going to have a functional government that's working for people. And I think, you know, watching Trump campaign in 2016, he often capitalized off this false populism where people are angry at a political system that's not working for them. And it's because of big money in the political process, or a large part because of that. I'd argue also the filibuster is an important thing that we have to get rid of. But the big money in the political process is really harming our ability to pass legislation, or Congress's ability to pass legislation to advance the needs of the American people. The fact that Manchin and Sinema refused to move Build Back Better and their resistance to that, really, you could follow the money in the course of that and the money flowing into their campaigns. But the money also into the Republican Party that blocked it overall. But also we can look at the money that corporations are still giving to the insurrectionists in Congress. In April, there is $1.4 million alone, just in April, from Fortune 500 companies that went to members of Congress that voted against certifying the 2020 election. So we have a very clear case right in front of us of corporations supporting the insurrectionists, supporting these MAGA Republicans who continue to work to undermine our elections. But yes, the bigger issue of money in politics and the Citizens United Supreme Court ruling has to be addressed for us to truly build a democracy that's functional.
Do you know if any Democrats are seriously working to get rid of the Electoral College? Because it's so important to remember that Trump won the 2020 election thanks to 80,000 people in just three states. Even though Biden won by 7 million votes, Trump came within 43,000 votes of being reelected, razor-thin margins in Wisconsin, Arizona, and Georgia. So what about the Electoral College?
Absolutely. I mean, there's a great national movement to abolish it, and it's going state by state because it has to go through the states first. And that's where the state compact is what can make it happen. If enough states say that they will send their electors to the winner of the popular vote, then we're able to override the Electoral College. And there is a movement to do that. We're not there yet, but that is definitely a movement and a motion and something that we support in addressing.
Well, thanks again, Robert. We'll definitely do a show about third parties soon and continue following the money. Jonah Minkoff-Zern is co-director of Public Citizens Democracy Campaign. Today, we are talking about threats and violence election officials endured because of Donald Trump's lies and what this means for future elections. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will discuss Supreme Court decisions. The court has ruled that taxpayer money can be used to pay for religious education. The National Education Association says this ruling further erodes public education. We'll also talk about cases affecting health insurance payments, disability payments for veterans, and prisoners challenging convictions and sentences. We just got news from SCOTUS blog that the court is going to issue opinions tomorrow and Friday at 7 a.m. Pacific time. There are 13 cases that still remain to be decided, including the case on Roe, guns, and affirmative action. So we're going to follow this very closely. And if we have to, we will change the show tomorrow and or Friday. So be sure there's a lot of important cases coming down. We hope you can join us for that. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. If you'd like to join today's conversation, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. What do you think of the hearing so far? If you're an election worker, have you been threatened? What do you think about everything we're learning about what workers are having to deal with? And what does this mean for future elections? Jonah Minkoff-Zern is co-director of Public Citizens Democracy Campaign. And now we would like to welcome Daniel Weiner to the show. Daniel is director of the Brennan Center's Elections and Government Program. He's a former senior counsel at the Federal Election Commission, where he once advised the commissioner on a number of issues under the First Amendment and federal campaign finance law. Hi, Daniel. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you all at the Brennan Center have come out with some really important reports. One found that election workers are leaving their jobs and they are asking for help. Officials fear that conspiracy theories will infect future elections. Nearly one in three local election officials know at least one worker who's left the job partly due to safety concerns, increased threats, or intimidation. Daniel, one of the things that people were surprised about hearing yesterday's testimony is that workers like Ruby Freeman and her daughter Shay Moss had no protection at all.
Yeah, I really appreciate you asking about that. And it is a big concern. You know, if we step back from, you know, these four powerful hearings that the January 6th committee has conducted, I think one takeaway is that, you know, the effort to intentionally overturn the will of the American people and disrupt the peaceful transition of power didn't end on January 6th, 2021. That in fact, the hearings are revealing systemic problems and you know, ongoing threats that are still continuing to this day. And much of our work has been documenting just the wave of attacks and intimidation directed at election officials. And that is leading, you know, to the possibility of a really unprecedented retention crisis. And when we saw the powerful testimony yesterday, you know, one naturally wants to ask oneself, well, if it were you, would you put up with that? And these people really are the backbone of our system. And if we can't protect them, and if we can't, you know, ensure that they get the respect they deserve and the appreciation they deserve, our democracy is going to be in big trouble.
What are your thoughts about, okay, so this is June 22nd. We've got a major election in November. And then, of course, there's the presidential election in 2024. So what concerns you the most about where we're going from here? I mean, if people are leaving their jobs, these are dedicated public officials like Shay Moss and Ruby Freeman, who love their jobs. And if they're leaving because Shay Moss left her job, then what? I did hear on MSNBC last night that while a lot of people are leaving, some people are just so determined they're staying. And then other people who really believe in this, not believing Trump, but believe in people voting and counting the votes, they're actually applying for these jobs.
I would just, yeah. Go ahead, Dan.
Sure. I will say that, you know, there is cause for concern. There's also cause for, you know, hope. I think that what it points to is in the immediate term, the urgent need to ensure that these people are protected. And that includes providing funding for security and making sure that we just adopt a zero tolerance policy, not only for efforts to intimidate voters, but also efforts to intimidate election workers. And actually, why I, you know, the process that the January 6th committee is engaging in is so important because it is helping us to develop the shared understanding of what took place and critically the sort of ongoing threats. And I think that as the hearings progress, we're going to see more about how the factors that led to the violent attack on the Capitol are in some respects continuing. And while we really need to urgently respond to the pressing threats to the next midterm elections and ultimately to the 2024 general election. Sorry, go ahead, Jonah. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, thank you. I would just echoing what was just said, and I would say it's our role to get people to sign up, you know, to be poll workers and to be poll monitors. You're right. People who believe in democracy and see the threat are taking action and doing that and organizing people to do that. There's a day of action coming up in August where it's going to be National Poll Worker Recruitment Day. A great website is powerthepolls.com, powerthepolls.com. And that helps people all over the country sign up and connect to be poll workers, or you can sign up to be a poll monitor at protectthevote.net. So those are examples of ways that people are building movement to protect our democracy. And we saw a tremendous outpouring of people signing up to do those things in the 2020 election when it was under threat, both by Trump and his MAGA allies and by COVID, where people were signing up to make sure that the polls that there were poll workers and that people were monitoring the polls in enormous numbers. And that's what we have to do again this year.
Well, let's hear from another caller. Let's go to Ed in San Francisco. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Well, actually, you kind of started to answer some of the questions. I'm listening to this stuff, and I'm seeing the kind of people out there that are just seem to be, you know, totally flummoxed by the masses of money. I mean, you can talk about we should get money out of elections, but they're the people with the money. They're the people that can do the advertising. So you're starting to mention something to stop this kind of thing and to change, to give real Democrats, I mean real Democrats in the broadest sense, a chance to do something. I'd like you to have a show purely on what we can do to ensure good elections and to overthrow Trump and his people.
Well, thank you. We have a related question from Leslie, who says, is there a church-going Republican voter or perhaps a former moral majority Republican voter who can honestly explain why and how they can support the immoral actions of Trump? Leslie, it's going to come down soon from the Supreme Court. If the last Roe ruling that was leaked is not significantly changed, Roe will most likely be overturned. And you know, a lot of people over the last couple years have said, if it means supporting this guy who I don't like what he says, but abortion will be illegal in half the country, then so be it. I mean, that's a simple way of putting it. But that's what a lot of people have said. Now, there are a lot of Republicans who oppose Trump, but he got 74 million votes in the last election. But yeah, we will definitely do more shows about this. So thank you for that call. I just want to play another clip and then we'll get comments from our guests. Just because a lot of this has happened under the radar and, you know, so much is going on right now, and it's important just to realize what workers had to deal with. In October, Vice News ran a piece called Death Threats Are Creating a Mass Exodus of Election Officials. In addition to these very disturbing threats, you will hear from Richard Barron, director of the Fulton County elections in Georgia, and Deirdre Holden, director of the Paulding County election in Georgia.
Hey, Rick. 234 years ago, the founding Caucasian fathers of America gave us the Second Amendment. Time's running out, Richard. We're coming after you and every mother that stole this election with our Second Amendment. Subpoenas be damned. You're going to be served lead, you fucking enemy communist. You will be served lead.
We'll make the Boston bombings look like child's play at the poll sites in this county. You just effing wait. No one at these places will be spared.
The first email that my wife received, your husband should tell the truth or your three kids will be fatally shot. Cops can't help you. Q. Then provides a link to an image of our home.
Well, we started receiving lots of disturbing phone calls. My staff is almost exclusively African American, and they started receiving calls laced with racial slurs. Starting on Christmas Day through New Year's Day, I received in my voicemail probably, it was at least 100 voicemails, up to 150.
You ought to blow your brains out, you piece of.
If you have a hand in this, you deserve to go to prison. You actually deserve to hang by your damn soy boy skinny ass neck.
Either you're blind or you're crooked as. So figure it out, buddy, because which side you going to be on when the shoot starts, brother?
They started to do surveillance on my staff, taking pictures of all of the individuals that would come in and go in and out of the warehouse. They would take pictures of their license plates. And I think at that point, especially for my staff and I, we were feeling as though we were under siege.
So this email is what we had received on January the 2nd. It states, this election is effing rigged. Detonations will occur at every polling site set up in this county. No one at these places will be spared. My first thought was, this cannot be happening here. This does not happen in Paulding County. The first calls I made were to the higher-ups. I was told that we had to take this as a serious threat. And when you start seeing the plan that the law enforcement has drawn out, where we, you know, have to park our cars up against the building because, you know, our office is on the ground floor, there's glass windows that we, you know, we're all sitting in front of. And the statement that pierced me was when he said, if a vehicle were to pull up, at least this would soften the blow. And when he said that, that was when I thought, this is real. This is real.
That is a Vice News report from October called Death Threats Are Creating a Mass Exodus of Election Officials. And if you want to watch the entire piece, you can find it at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about what election officials have had to endure because of Donald Trump's lies with Daniel Wiener, director of the Brennan Center's Election and Government Program, and Jonah Minkoff-Zern, co-director of Public Citizens Democracy Campaign. Daniel, what are government officials doing to ensure that election officials moving forward will be working in safety?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I think that one thing that we are trying to do is encourage law enforcement to use the tools they already have to ensure that people are protected. And I think that there is some positive movement there. I think that there could be more. But, you know, it's important to keep in mind that the conduct that is happening here often in the vast majority of cases is illegal. And we need to enforce the law that is on the books. I think that there is also some exploration of other ways to protect election officials. I think that the federal government could provide funds for increased, and there is some discussion of providing funds for increased security for election officials. And I think that there could be some other legal changes, again, to counteract harassment, doxing, you know, some of the tactics that have been deployed against them. I did want to, you know, mention one other thing that really struck me from the clip you played, which is, you know, we cannot lose sight of the fact that the effort to overturn the 2020 election, you know, primarily targeted the votes of folks of color. And many of the election workers who are also being harassed, as one of the speakers in that clip said, are also people of color who, you know, devote their time and their energy to making our elections run. So, you know, this is a dimension of this that is really about resistance to a kind of vision of multiracial democracy. That many of us obviously hold very dear, and that is emerging. And so when we talk about protecting election officials, protecting the democratic process, I think we have to keep sight of the fact that that is ultimately what we are trying to protect here.
What other concrete steps, Jonah, can government officials take before the November election happens? Because, I mean, when you look at the number of Trump supporters who are spewing the same lies, who have won their primary, according to the Washington Post, it's more than 100 Republicans have won their primary. And we're talking high-level people here. Doug Mastriano in Pennsylvania is running for governor. He was at the January 6th insurrection. If he wins in November, he's going to have the authority to appoint Pennsylvania's Secretary of State, who oversees election administration. So what needs to be done before November so this violence does not continue, and so all votes are counted?
I mean, I think what Dan is talking about as far as funding support for elections is very important on a federal level. And then, you know, we have to take action we have to get involved in the elections. And, you know, we're nonpartisan, but we definitely encourage people to be active in supporting the people they believe in are going to do the right thing. And we are supporting two very important ballot initiatives in Michigan and Arizona that will fortify the state's elections, that will prevent election interference, and that will will break down barriers to voting in those states. So those are things that people in those states can get involved in, but people around the country can get involved in supporting them and recruiting volunteers and doing outreach. And also, we just need to be speaking out locally about what's happening in the hearings. We need to watch the hearings. You know, as I said at the beginning, this is something that I do every day, all the time. And still, to me, watching the hearing yesterday was really moving and was really motivating. So I really would encourage everyone to be vigilant, to be aware, to watch the hearings, to learn what's happening, and to speak out about what's happening.
I would just add to be in touch with your elected officials. You know, the Congress came very close earlier this year to passing a comprehensive set of democracy reforms that would have included protections for voting rights and against many of the tactics to sort of sabotage the electoral process. Even while that has not become law, there are other reforms that are being considered, including, for example, reforms to the so-called Electoral Count Act, the law that governs, the selection of presidential electors. And folks should, reach out to their elected officials, be in touch, and demand that, they work to pass real reforms. If not the sort of comprehensive reforms that we came so close to passing before, at least a robust changes to the Electoral Count Act, which is the first step of many that we need to take. Over the long term, I do think, we need national standards to protect the right to vote. We need other safeguards for the electoral process. But in the short term, as Jonah says, speaking out and really putting pressure on your elected officials to do what it takes to protect the sanctity of the vote.
Since you both brought up the importance of ensuring that elections are funded appropriately, can we just spend a couple minutes on this? Because I just have to say, I was blown away when I heard this piece on NPR in December of 2020, how private money from Facebook CEO saved the 2020 election. With a tight budget and little help from the federal government, a Chester County, Pennsylvania, applied for an election grant from the Center for Tech and Civic Life, a small-based nonprofit that quickly amassed hundreds of millions of dollars in donations to help local election offices, most notably $350 million from Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and his wife Priscilla Chan. I mean, again, the priorities of this country, the fact that we need hundreds of millions of dollars from someone like Zuckerberg to fund elections and it not coming from government coffers, basically from the taxpayer, but that's where we are. Well, fast forward to April of 2022, the nonprofit that distributed that $350 million said that it will not disperse similar donations after a backlash from conservatives who basically say they don't want money being spent on elections by a company like Facebook. So do you have any updates on this, Daniel? Where's the money going to come from?
Well, I'm glad you raised that because I've seen the same backlash. And I will say that I do not think private funding of election administration is ideal by any stretch of the imagination. But, I also think the folks objecting to it should put their money where their mouth is, essentially, and we should provide a steady stream of funding for elections. I am, optimistic, hopeful that Congress will come through to bolster states. I also think that there's increased awareness on the part of election officials and legislators around the country that this is important and this is an essential public service. But there's no guarantee. And I think that is, it's one of those maybe somewhat dry issues that people don't think is motivating enough to call your elected official and demand that they make this a priority. But it is really important is that, we make sure that election administration in California and around the country is adequately funded. I hope the federal government will step in. There's certainly money was earmarked in the president's budget for this, whether it'll pass. But regardless, at both the state and the federal level, it's important to make your elected officials aware that this is a priority for you and that you expect them to deliver.
Jonah, anything to add on this or just final thoughts? We've got about a minute left.
I think Dan said that well. I would encourage people, a good way to get involved with the work that we and our coalition are doing around the hearings, the website mobilize.us/Jan6hearings. It has good resources and events that we're organizing, including our letter to the editor training we're doing later today. It's mobilize.us/Jan6hearings. I think we have to get involved. That's the answer to this. We have to build a movement that's stronger than their movement, that's stronger than the MAGA movement, that is going to demand that we continue to have a robust democracy and that we build a stronger democracy that's multiracial and where people are truly represented. And that's, it's up to all of us to take action right now. We're at this key moment in history that's going to determine the future of our nation's democracy.
Jonah Minkoff-Zern is co-director of Public Citizens Democracy Campaign. Daniel Wiener is director of the Brennan Center's Elections and Government Program. Thank you both for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And again, you can find clips from yesterday's January 6th hearings. We also have that Vice news report up at yourcallradio.org. The next set of January 6th hearings are tomorrow at noon Pacific time. We are also expecting, not sure if the major Supreme Court decisions will come down, but we just got word that it's tomorrow at 7 a.m. They'll start trickling out, and then Friday at 7 a.m. And we've got guests lined up to specifically talk about the Roe decision, because that one obviously is so important. There's also an issue around open carry, affirmative action, climate change, lots of important decisions coming down. If the major ones don't come down, we will talk about the other important issues that are not getting enough attention tomorrow, including a ruling that taxpayer money can be used to pay for religious education, further weakening the separation of church and state. Thanks to BSOL for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.